Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to part two of our Remembering Terry Gordy special of Goodwill Wrestling. This is Will. I'm here with Rob Naylor. Rob, how you doing?
Hey, Will, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hey, guys, what's up? This is our second part of our show. Yesterday's fucked up at the end, but it's all right. I thought it was a fine show, and we're coming back for round two. If you think you were done talking about Terry fucking Gordy, you're way wrong. We got at least half
hey, Rob,
career.
Rob, are you there? Rob, are you there? Rob, are
yeah,
you there?
Yeah, that was the coolest way to end the show of all time. It's like we planned it. But yeah, we are both here. We can hear each other. So for now, it's safe. We're going to continue the dialogue. And I guess we ended with me discussing, as a child, reading about Terry Gordy pinning Hacksaw Duggan clean with a pile driver in the UWF title tournament, which was cool because it's a Bill Watts thing to let the bad guy beat the good guy clean, which always is like, it makes you think, shit, that bad guy's for real. Did it with Vader and Sting. Did it with Gordy and Duggan beforehand. And Gordy was the man, dude. I remember numerous people saying, like, Gordy was the champ. Ric Flair was the champ. Hulk Hogan was the champ. And the other champ in AWA probably would be Bockwinkel in 86. So, like, in 86,
yeah.
It might have been. Yeah. Because Hansen jumped ship in 86 and Bach took it over. Like, I thought Gordy was by far the best world champion at the time. But, it's, you know, open for debate. But I thought Gordy had it all. He had the promo skills. He's clearly the best worker. And people will say, oh, but Ric Flair. Fuck Ric Flair. Terry Gordy shits
all
over
Ric
Flair.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yes, he does. So, like, fuck Ric Flair. At least in Terry Gordy matches, you don't see the same fucking match every time. So I will put Terry Gordy shit over Flair's any day. But I thought Gordy was the man, the best champion in 1987. His run was awesome with that belt. He had numerous different people he defended against, whether it be Ted DiBiase or Hacksaw Duggan in rematches or Dr. Death Steve Williams when they really got their feud going for the first time when he was a champ. I thought his best opponent was probably DiBiase, and unfortunately, there's not too many of their matches that made it to tape. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a full match. I mean, I know they had one in Houston in a cage, which I've seen the end of, but that was they were said to have some epic 60-minute matches. I don't think any of them exist, but I would. That's of all the matches I have on my list of Holy Grail matches to find. That's one of them. The other one is a match, ironically enough, from Central States. From 1983 and 84, and it's Terry Mecca against Manny Fernandez. Yes, that's a 18-year-old Terry Gordy wrestling Manny Fernandez in Central States. So if anyone ever has any of those Wrestling at the Chase DVDs and you find that, give me a holler. But, yeah, what do you think about Terry Gordy's UWF title run there, Will?
Well, first, I wanted to comment on your ability to mention Manny Fernandez on every show, no matter what the topic is. And I applaud you.
Absolutely.
For that.
Deservedly so.
Well, and I actually had someone ask me about this. But, yes, in the future, we will be doing a show about Manny Fernandez. You can take that to the bank. But getting back to Gordy, I think that Terry Gordy is right up there with the world champions in 86. Now, me, I'm a firm believer that you don't have to knock one champion to raise another. So I personally loved Ric Flair's 1986. When we do the best of the Crockett 1980 set, you're going to see Ric Flair in action in 86, and he really was as good as advertised. I'm going to disagree with Rob. I think that Ric Flair is amazing, and for all you Flair fans, fear not. There are still sane people in this world. But speaking of Gordy in UWF, like I mentioned yesterday, this was the time when I first started watching wrestling on Saturdays for maybe 10 hours at a time, just with all of the different promotions that were out at the time, with syndication and cable TV coming on strong. And, you know, UWF, his run there was, in a way, it was kind of sad because he was hitting his peak, and then all of a sudden, you know, they did the arm injury angle where they had to take the belt off of him before he could defend the title. And then he was gone. You know, he made one of his disappearing acts. And I'm just curious about your thoughts on that, Rob. It seemed like every time Gordy would come into a territory, you know, kind of at the peak of his career, you know, he'd go to Japan and do one of those Japan runs. And then he'd disappear, you know, here in the States, and you were left wondering where he was at, especially after you invested so much time watching the guy. So what were your thoughts on Gordy,
the
invisible
person? I didn't like it at the time, but it obviously paid to be Guy Jean in the 80s, you know, working for Giant Baba. And I just thought of it right now. Something ironic about it, maybe not ironic, I'm like Alanis Morissette misusing that word, but like something interesting is that the guy we were just talking about, Stan Hansen, left AWA, dropping his world belt to Bockwinkle without having the match, and Terry Gordy also would go on to drop his world belt to the one-man gang without having the match, both because they were scheduled for All Japan tours. So I think that's kind of interesting. Like, everyone shit on Hansen for not doing the right thing. But no one ever said a peep about Gordy. I don't know whether Gordy was legitimately injured before his All Japan tour or what, but I just definitely know that that was the reason they gave, because I remember Dr. Death dropped a big knee on Gordy's arm and injured it after they injured his arm. So, but yeah, honestly, I would have loved to see Gordy and Gang go at it, man, and Gang beat Gordy. I think that would have been a badass as fuck match. I wish that would have happened, actually. But,
I've been watching so much One Man Gang lately, and the guy really he deserves to have his career chronicled, because he's another guy that, for his size, just he knew what he was doing in the ring, and it's kind of weird, you know, because Vince McMahon, you know, kind of took all of those Watts guys from the UWF, and I don't think that he ever got the full package from any of them, you know. Except maybe DiBiase, because the Million Dollar Man was a huge, huge star in late 80s WWF. But with Duggan, I mean, Duggan was popular, but I don't think he got as much out of Duggan as he could have. And I feel the same way with One Man Gang.
Yeah, he did.
What's that?
Everybody does. He didn't get as much out of Duggan, but everybody knows Duggan. So, like, you could say he definitely got enough out of him. Like,
yeah.
Everyone knew Duggan. Everyone, I remember in the 88, I went to a show at Hershey Arena that Hogan headlining. And before, during, and after the show, all you heard were drunk assholes going, ho, ho, the whole entire show. Like, he was over as a motherfucker. So, yeah, they got their just due out of old Duggan. One Man Gang didn't, but Vince never liked One Man Gang. He liked Akeem, you know, so whatever. And I love Akeem. But I do understand that the gang probably would have been a cooler idea if you want to present someone as badass and legitimate threat. But, you know, whatever.
Well,
where are we going with this?
And then we'll look at it like, you know, I mean, obviously Duggan could never be the number one face in the WWF the same way that he was in UWF in Mid-South, just simply because Hogan was there. And Hogan was, you know, the megastar, the pop icon or whatever.
But Gang and Gordy, though, Gang and Gordy is badass. And something I wish the kids had now was magazines. Like, kids now, they just have, like, glossy colored WWF magazines. And, you know, that's cool, whatever. I won't be too disgruntled an old man here. But, like, in our day, we had, like, magazines for, like, $1.75. You get them every Tuesday or Wednesday. And It was like Inside Wrestling, The Wrestler, and Pro Wrestling Illustrated were like the holy trinity of magazines. And I remember my dad would get me them before school, and I'd be all stoked. But like one of the magazines I had, I thought it was like the coolest thing, and I literally can close my eyes right now and see the picture vividly, was Gordy looking up at Kamala coming down with the big Baba chop to the head while One Man Gang was right next to him ready to attack him too. And I thought, holy shit. Gordy's wrestling the gang and Kamala. He's badass. And I always I don't even know what the match was from. All I know is it was Gordy getting his ass handed to him by Kamala and the One Man Gang. I kept thinking, shit, man, that's crazy. Because I always liked the whole underdog thing anyway. So I don't know. Hey. I just remember that very vividly. I don't know where that match happened, but
if anyone's listening out there, if you can tell us where that match happened, feel free to chime in. We'd love to check that out. But now, Rob, well, since we brought it up, you know, we talked about him disappearing and how Baba was, signing those big checks. What did you think of the Gordy Hansen tag team, man? Because we're about to release the 1980s All Japan set soon, and when we release it, you're really going to get to see this tag team shine, and I'm really curious on where you think they stand from the footage you've seen.
Gordy and Hansen are either the greatest tag team of all time or the second greatest tag team of all time. How do you like them apples? I would put Gordy and Hansen number one over every fucking team that ever existed on Earth. And if not them, Rick Rude and Manny Fernandez. Rude and Bull or Gordy and Hansen, and Doc and Gordy and the Steiners are tied for third. I'm telling you right now, that team of Hansen and Gordy, fuck man, like everyone talks about Brody and Hansen. Hansen himself says that Brody and Hansen is the greatest tag team of all time. He's entitled to that. I love Brody more than your average bear. I know he's had been shit on a little bit recently, but I like Brody. He's badass as shit. But for me, my money, I want the fucking freight train locomotive badass motherfucker Stan Hansen right next to the fucking frenzied young southerner, you know, Terry Gordy, who could bump. Hansen didn't bump that often, so you had Gordy able to do that. That's the thing about Hansen and Gordy that I liked. Gordy would beg off. Gordy would get his ass kicked a little bit, whereas Brody and Hansen both were just like, go, 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 guzzle, guzzle, guzzle. And that sounded really gross. However, they would guzzle all their opponents. They wouldn't let anyone get anything in. But Gordy was always that guy that would give and take really well with anybody, you know. He'd make the lesser card young Japanese wrestler look awesome. So, I love them as a tag team. I love the fucking leather vests they would wear. They had the cowboy boots. They just really were an awesome tag team. And Gordy and Hansen, as God is my fucking witness, against Toshiaki Kawada and Tenryu, Junichiro Tenryu, is the greatest. I put a top five tag team matches of all time, and everyone's going to get to see that match real soon because it is incredible. And I don't think Doc and Gordy, as awesome as that fucking tag team was, I don't even think they had a match as awesome as that match. So.
Wow. Well, I mean, I can't even argue that last point, but I am going to agree with you on the Brody Hansen tag team. I've watched a lot of the footage of those guys, and they had opportunities to have really great matches, but when neither guy would sell or act vulnerable at any point in the match, it really made it hard to enjoy a match. You know, when you have guys like Jumbo and Tenryu just throwing bombs at them and then them shaking them off, it just really made for a frustrating viewing experience. But then, you know, when you had Gordy and Hansen, you know, Hansen would play Hansen, and Hansen's great at what he does. But then you have Gordy, and Gordy would sell. And he'd take those huge bumps that we talked about where, you know, he would just, you know, fall all over the ring. And then, you know, you're talking about Japanese offense where, you know, they're really laying in the lariat and the power bombs and the strikes and the slaps, and Gordy would sell them like death. And it really, you know, really meant something, because sometimes Gordy, he'd kind of find himself in a face and peril situation where he'd finally make the tag to Hansen, and then Hansen would just rip somebody's head off with that lariat. So I'm with you, man. I wouldn't call him the greatest tag team of all time. I have a few others that are probably higher on my list, but they are certainly refreshing change of pace from that Brody Hansen tag. I can't believe Hansen said that, man. That's frustrating to think that tag team that gave nothing to any team they faced, you know, except Baba. They would sell for Baba, you know, because he was writing the checks, I guess. But to think that
was you had to fight for your life over there in the 80s. Like, in the 90s, you'll notice Hansen did start to sell a lot, but he didn't start to sell until he beat Kawada, Kobashi, and Misawa's asses numerous times. They had to earn that ability to make him sell. He sold his ass off in, like, the early 90s and mid-90s. I will give Hansen credit.
Sure.
I'm not trying to bury Hansen or anything. But, like, I think at the time you had to be like that. The Road Warriors were the same way. They would not give – like, they fight them in All Japan's and others. They would come in and just fucking guzzle everybody. That's the way you had to be. That's what Hansen told every Gaijin wrestler that ever got on that tour bus. Fight to fucking make your living. Ted DiBiase's another one. But, like, I that was just the way they had to do it. I remember Hansen even said, was trying to get Brody and Hansen to win the belts from Baron and the Crusher. That's another thing that nobody knows. But they said, fuck that, we're going with Baba. And then the Road Warriors were the guys that ended up being the dominant force. If Hansen and Brody weren't so bullish, they could have literally been the Road Warriors. Hansen and Brody also almost went with Crockett at one point. I mean, there's so many. Imagine Hansen and Brody against Ivan, Nikita, and Crusher Khrushchev. They could have done so many cool things, but they were all about business. And they were all about getting their way. So, you know, that worked for Hansen. I mean, he's retired happily right now. And let me tell you something. We will do a fucking Stan Hansen show, and it will be on par with this one. Stan Hansen's he's in my top 8 guys of all time, too. I'm no bullshit there. I love Stan Hansen. But, you know, Hansen and Gordy, man, they don't have – I've only ever seen, like, 8 of their fucking matches, which tells you my credibility on saying they're the greatest tag team of all time. But for me, Rob Naylor, all those matches I cherish. I thoroughly enjoy them both, and, like, it doesn't matter to me how many matches I've seen. I, as a fan, love both of those wrestlers, and in tandem, they always delivered, and God bless them. So that's all. They didn't have a funny name, though. They weren't the Miracle Power Combination or the Miracle Violence Combination or the New Power Combo, but they deserve to have a fucking nickname. Well, come on.
The Southern Lariat Power Bomb connection.
The shit kicking
Express. Lobos.
That's what I call them.
The Southern Lariat Lobos. Express. Yeah. Yeah, man. I don't know. I'm not very good at naming tag teams, so we'll leave that to you. But I would agree that they had to, you know, like you said, they had to eat everyone alive to survive. But then you have guys like Gordy coming over, bumping and selling big for the Japanese guys, and still having a strong career in All Japan. And I think that's what makes it frustrating, is that Hansen and Brody could have done the same, still retained credibility, you know, the same way Gordy did, but they chose not to, you know, and the matches suffered for it. That's kind of my point. But, you know, it was, you know, that's All Japan, and, you know, we're talking about stuff that we saw on tape years after, because, like you said, the only way we even knew Gordy was in Japan was through an After Mag, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, mm-hmm. or The Wrestler, or Inside Wrestling. But, you know, let's talk about when he came back to the States. You know, in 1989, man, I was kind of in and out of wrestling. I was watching NWA, and I saw Gordy come back, I think it was on an episode of Power Hour, and, you know, he reunites with Michael Hayes and now the other Freebird, Jimmy Garvin. And, you know, I've seen Jimmy Garvin as a Freebird in World Class, you know, since, but, you know, to me it was just weird to have Gordy as kind of like the third Freebird when you know, him and Hayes are brothers, you know, and now he's just kind of like the third guy. And that was kind of weird to me. What did you think about Gordy's return to WCW, NWA in 1989?
All right, I'm about to talk for 25 minutes. Here's the thing. Gordy came back.
It's all you.
Gordy came back at the Music City Showdown. Everyone remembers that show for Steamboat beating, or Flair losing to Flair, or Steamboat losing to Flair even. Flair probably did lose to Flair, same match. But, like, Steamboat lost to Flair, and Funk beat the shit out of Flair, right? A glorious moment in all of our lives. However, prior to that, Luger and Hayes had the big U.S. title match. They collided in the ring, hit heads. Hayes fell backwards to the ropes. Luger fell flat on the mat. This cowboy from out of nowhere came out of the audience, pushed Michael Hayes on top of Luger. One, two, three. He got in the ring and was then going to find out, oh, my God, that's Terry Bam Bam Gordy. You know, Terry Gordy is back in the NWA with Michael P.S. Hayes. It was boner time in my house at the time because I was losing my shit. No homo. I was losing my mind that fucking Terry Gordy showed up in the NWA. I was thinking, holy shit, Terry Gordy against Lex Luger all summer of 89. It's going to be amazing. Or Terry Gordy and Sting. It's going to be fucking nuts. Well, no, that shit never happened because all it was fucking Gordy and Dr. Death all fucking summer. An awesome fucking match, don't get me wrong. But it always seemed like Gordy never got any other real matches. I remember there was a Gordy and Funk tag match against Doc and Sting, which I was fucking loving because Gordy was in the ring with Sting, which never really happened that often. But, fuck, I was so excited about that, and nothing ever really materialized. And then, of course, as Will said, who's the third Freebird? It's not going to be Buddy Roberts, as Michael Hayes said on countless promos. Ends up being Gorgeous Jay. I love Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin with all my heart. If we ever get Jim Garvin on the show, I will be the fucking happiest person in the world. Because Gorgeous Jimmy coming out to ZZ Top with fucking Precious in the thing was so badass to me as a kid. But I was not against Jimmy Garvin as a member. However, we're getting back to wrestling figures because God knows we're cyclical here on our show. Me and my friends at the time were in like 7th grade or whatever, 6th grade, and we played with these Mattel action wrestling figures. And we were all sitting down hanging out, and the Freebirds came out to the Freebird music, and it changed in NWA, whereas it was always like the slowest build-up of Freebird. Well, then in the NWA, they would kick it to, nah, Freebird, yeah. And like the Freebirds all came out to the ring, and Jim Garvin ran out to the ring, and Michael Hayes ran out to the ring, and they had fucking sparkles and glitter and all this shit on them. And then Gordy just walked out with, like, a black bandana, sunglasses, black tights, and, like, white boots. And my friends would be like, yeah, fuck him. He's not a Freebird. These guys are cool. Look at them in a cool outfit.
What?
I'm like, what? I was like, whatever, dude. Terry Gordy is the man. They're like, he's a fat Freebird. I'm like, screw you guys. I hate you. I'm going home. You know? Like, that would all end, you know. We weren't friends after that because they made fun of Gordy. But, like, and that sticks with me because, like, that's bullshit. You know, Terry Gordy is the fucking he is the heater, the cooler, if you will. He is the Patrick Swayze and Roadhouse of this equation. He kicks everyone's ass after the Freebirds talk and run their mouths. So what I'm getting at here, Gordy should not have been the third bird. I thought that was bullshit. He should not have spent the whole fucking summer fighting with Dr. Death Steve Williams, as awesome as that was. He got a couple matches with Michael Hayes against the Road Warriors, which is pretty cool. Got a couple wimpy matches, nowhere near close to satiate my wrestling appetite, but whatever. But, like, Terry Gordy in 1989 NWA should have been way bigger than he was. He was not. And that was my favorite time ever in history of wrestling, by the way, Will. Summer 89. I was talking to Missy Hyatt the other day about this. Summer of 89 NWA, best time in all of wrestling ever. Like, top to bottom, there was so many cool things going on. But bottom line, I guess everyone couldn't get their shit together on the committee, and Gordy just wrestled Dr. Death all the time. I don't know who's in charge of booking that all summer, but fuck them. So.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, I mean, I know Flair was involved in a feud with Terry Funk at the time, but, you know, if Terry Funk and Terry Gordy were friends or whatnot, or, you know, allies, there's no reason you couldn't have a Terry Gordy versus Ric Flair match on an episode.
I loved it at
Power
the time.
Hour,
I liked Babyface Flair in 1989. As much as I hate him now, and I think all this shit is repetitive, I was losing my shit for Ric Flair as a good guy in 1989 because I never seen Ric Flair as a good guy until 1989. And that way that was done was awesome.
No.
Flair Gordy was
but
badass.
That's what I'm saying, though, Rob. Is that the possibilities? I mean, Terry Gordy versus Ricky Steamboat was right there for him. You know, the Great Muta was there. Terry Gordy versus the Great Muta could have been an awesome
Muta,
match.
Yeah, but Muta, that would have been a reach. The other two would have happened. Muta would have been a reach. Pillman was starting out. Pillman Gordy would have been badass.
Sure.
Would have been a squash.
Gordy versus Luger in 1989, bro.
Oh, I know. They fucked it up. And then they turned Luger as soon as Hayes. Oh, you know what, though? That's true. They basically turned Luger right after Hayes beat him. Because he was mad. He's like, I'm sick and tired of being the nice guy and losing because people cheat. So you know what? They, at least they have a storyline now. I bitched about it earlier, but they couldn't really do Luger Gordy all summer because they turned Luger immediately. You're right. All right.
Well,
yeah, Steamboat
well, I guess,
there.
I guess
cool.
they could have. Or, but it, you know, if you know, you just mentioned it, you know, gets beat by Hayes. Then what if, you know, Luger's complaining about being a nice guy, and then he turns around and gets beat by Hayes' brother, Gordy, who just came in.
Oh, yeah.
Luger
I
would
agree.
Lose his shit, you know.
Yeah, and we got an extra cool match out of it, too. And you know what's fucked up, too? That could have happened on that clash in Fort Bragg, and this is how big of a nerd I am, because I remember Luger didn't wrestle on that show because they had Funk against Steamboat, right? And
mm-hmm.
Luger came out afterwards,
yep.
like, Ricky, come on, let's go, and he turned on him. They could have literally had Luger go over the edge, losing to Gordy earlier after they cheated, and then come out, and he's mad that he's not the number one contender, turn on Steamboat, clothesline, hit you in the chair, goodbye. But they didn't do that with
exactly.
it, so we can stop booking things. But yeah, that would be
know,
bad.
Right. But we need to do that, right? A guest booker for 1989 NWA, Goodwill
Wrestling.
Oh,
right.
You know, podcast. It's coming. No, well, that one probably is not coming. People don't wait up for that one. But now, Rob, you got to help me here. Now, for the next couple of years, from like 1990, 91, where was Gordy only in All Japan, or where else was he at that time?
Gordy would go back to All Japan, and I would look at him and in my magazine and read about his results in the arena reports at the end of PWI, and I'd always be all excited. I'd see he wrestled Hansen, and they were fighting him the Triple Crown. I'm like, whoa, that's badass. And I'd see team with Dr. Death, and I was like, fuck, what a team that is, you know? And then they'd be wrestling Spidey and Hansen. I'd be like, shit, that sounds awesome, too. And then, like, Doc and Gordy would come back to the States, and they wrestled for Global, or USWA, that came on ESPN. I remember they had a match with Chris Germany and some other wimpy guy, and it was basically like a 25-minute wimpy match, like lots of half crabs, lots of hole. I didn't like it for them. I liked them just wreck havoc on everybody, but they did that wimpy match, and then they went away, and they never were back. And then he'd show up in USWA and wrestle Waller in like 1990 for some reason, and then he'd go away again, and then Gordy would come back and work for Herb Abrams, and then he'd go away again. So basically, they were not in the States for any real amount of time. And by the time you found out they were in the States, it had already happened. You're reading about it in the magazine. And at the time, you certainly didn't have fucking footage of it. You know what I mean? Like, I wish it was like now where you get footage of this stuff. Like, I got to watch NWA, WWF, and AWA in World Class if I was lucky. We didn't have any of them on the screen. Like, I probably wouldn't have got to see Gordy against Wallace. So, like, you know, I missed out on all that shit. So then by the time they finally came back, big time, because they said ahead of time, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy are coming to the NWA, and they're coming from the tag team belts. And who had the tag team belts? The fucking Steiner brother. So we all know how that ended.
Yeah. Well, now, speaking of coming back to WCW in 1992, all right, what did you think of his whole tag run with Doc? Because, you know, like you said, you got to read about him and Doc tearing it up in Japan, and now finally they're a tag team, and Bill Watts brings them in. And you know,
I remember vividly.
Like
okay, 1992, Sting just beat Luger. Luger went to WWF, I think. This is the way it went. So they had a magazine. WCW Magazine was out at the time, and they had an article in the magazine. Who's the best tag team in the world? They had Steiner footage beating up Arn and Bobby Eaton and all that stuff. They just won the belts. And then they had all this footage, all these photos from Japan of Doc and Gordy beating everyone's ass, double shoulder blocking motherfuckers. And they had them with, like, three sets of tag team belts over their shoulders and waist. And they had that globe shit that they have in all Japan on, like, those globe trophies. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And they have a check for, like, 800 million yen in front of them, like a giant check. I'm like, man, I don't know what's going on over there, but it looks like they're kicking some fucking ass. So I was like, holy shit. The NWA WCW is going to finally put together the match of my fucking dreams. It's going to be the Steiner brothers and Doc and Gordy. Fuck. And my cable system didn't get WCW pay-per-views at the time. Because in like June 16th, there was a pay-per-view called Beach Blast or something. And I remember Doc and Gordy were supposed to wrestle the Steiners on it. I still don't think I've seen that full match, despite I know I have on tape somewhere. But I never saw that match. So I went over to my friend Tommy's house. I would drive 30 minutes out of my way to my friend Tommy's grandma's fucking house. It smelled like fucking old person shit and fucking, like, Ovaltine. We'd go into the fucking place, and she didn't even know how to turn the fucking TV on. There's mothballs all over the place, and we would sit and watch the fucking Clash of the Champions because we didn't get CBS in Shamokin either. We'd have to drive fucking 30 minutes to see. I would fucking feign injuries and go to the goddamn hospital 35 minutes away because they had CBS and sit in the waiting room. However, I went to Tommy's house. We're watching Tommy's grandma's house. I called her Mima. We'd go to her house. We'd watch it. And it was the big tournament, right, the NWA title. They're bringing back the NWA name. They had teams from all over the country. Fucking Gordy and Doc wrestled the O'Days, these two Australians, and they fucking dropped him on their heads numerous times. Larry O'Day looked like he was 72. He almost died in that match, and then they destroyed them. The Steiners were supposed to wrestle the Puerto Rican team. Well, as Bill Watts so cleverly booked, the Puerto Rican team never made it. And as Terry Gordy said, there was a Puerto Rican wreck. A Puerto Rican. Ain't no Puerto Ricans. And they beat up the Puerto Ricans in the dressing room, who were never to be seen. And it ended up being Bill Watts in the middle of the ring. The Steiners got a bye. And he's like, yo, pay to see this. We're going to hook him up. Let's hook him up. And, like, what he said, look, let's hook up Doc and Gordy tonight against the Steiner brothers. Holy shit. I lost. I legit did two laps around fucking Nima's fucking living room, and they looked at me like a crazy person. I lost my mind. Never to this fucking day was there a time where I was so excited about a wrestling match, because I knew it was going to happen within the next 10 or 20 minutes, and I was going to see it live. The two favorite teams that I was so building up to see and wrestle, and they had a great match. They did some grappling at the start. Rick did a leg takedown, just start throwing bombs on Doc, and then they the fisticuffs, and, like, Rick Steiner and Terry Gordy throwing punches at each other is, like, the greatest thing ever. And the fucking Gordy and Williams won basically clean after hurting Scott Steiner's knee, and they won, like, they made it to, like, the title tournament or whatever in July, which I didn't see either, but fuck, man. I was so excited, and I was so happy they won, too. Because at the time, like, the good guys always won, so I was happy that the bad guys won. But, yeah, man, Doc and Gordy and the Steiners, shit. Now, I've only ever seen one or two of their matches. I remember they had another match in July. I was going to California that year, I think. But they had a match in July where Scott hit a Frankensteiner on Gordy, and Doc came and clotheslined Scott Steiner's head off his fucking body while he's in Frankensteiner position. Shit. Won the belt clean again. So Gordy and Doc were double champions. And I was just like, holy shit.
Could you imagine that today, though? Like, an entire pay-per-view based around tag teams. And not just, like, random put-together tag teams, but actual, you know, tag teams like the Steiners or Doc and Gordy. It would never happen today. You know, tag team wrestling has been relegated to opening match status or, you know, how quick is the partner going to turn on a tag team that just formed, you know, 3 weeks ago. And, you know, to have, like, tag teams like that, you know, as a focal point of the company and of the pay-per-view they're trying to sell. I mean, and, you know, I'm not Meltzer. I don't know, you know, how many pay-per-views it sold. I don't know if it was successful or not. You know, probably not. They were probably losing their ass at that time. But seriously, man, just to give tag teams of that caliber the respect that they kind of deserved and you know, build entire programs and shows and pay-per-views around, to me, is just amazing and just something that, you know, quite frankly, I don't think we'll ever see again.
Yeah, that clash that I was talking about, the Puerto Rican wreck, that clash,
yeah, clash
was
19.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that because I had it on tape, and I remember that was the first time I saw the Malenkos. That was the first time I saw a full Jushin Liger match. That was the first time I saw Benoit. That was the first time I saw Silver King 1 and 2. That was like, it would have been the first time I saw the Headhunters. But
wasn't Conan on their show?
No, he was not. That's Starrcade 90, but close. But they were trying to get Victor Quiñones had a deal where the Headhunters were going to be on it. And the Puerto Rican team was supposed to be Miguel Perez Jr. and somebody else. But they didn't show up. So then the Headhunters were like two wimpy masked guys. And then obviously they did the angle with the Steiners. But that Clash was fucking badass. I love that show. But the tournament you were talking about, the Great American Bash, I'll say this. I'm unpopular here saying this, but I thought that tag tournament sucked at the Great American Bash.
What?
So I remember Doc
like,
and Gordy,
like wrestling-wise
Doc and
or
wrestled,
booking-wise?
Yeah. Doc and Gordy wrestled Lindum and Dustin, I think. And it was the longest fucking match. I think they wrestled Nikita and Steamboat too. And it was during the Bill Watts hook a hold and just ride it days. Oh, my God. You can hear a pin drop for these matches. And that show had the greatest match possibly ever on it with Sting and Vader. Hyperbole. Look out. The alarm's going off. But, like, Sting and Vader, where Vader gave Sting the powerbomb and pinned him in Baltimore. Because I remember being like, wow, really? But, like, that was not a good show. As much as they gave the tag teams for that show, like, I didn't think the matches were very good. And you know it hurts me to say that I didn't like those matches in hindsight. But I didn't think
yeah,
they were very
I know,
good.
Man. Cause
all the matches were, like, 18 minutes, you know? Like, I don't want to see, like, 18 minutes, you know? So, whatever.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I think what we need to do is I need to find a way to get you a copy of that show and maybe send Missy Hyde a copy of that show. We'll watch the show and we'll discuss it match by match or something because, you know, when I viewed it and, you know, as I've put some of those matches on some of the comps or whatever, I remember really liking that show. And, you know, you got to see Shinya Hashimoto, you know, just kick people in the chest. And I don't know, man, Jushin Liger and Brian Pillman tagged up on that show against, you know, one of my favorites of all time, Ricky Steamboat and Nikita, although Nikita kind of sucked at that time. So I was really excited for that show, actually. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that's something that I'll have to revisit. Maybe, you know, we can review it and kind of discuss our thoughts on the show on the air after watching it or something.
Yeah, I remember when it was in one of the old Observers, everyone was like, fuck, you know. People liked Sting and Vader. But, like, I think the Liger tag was cut short a little bit. And then I think, like, all the Doc and Gordy tags just went, like, fucking 25 minutes or something. I just remember that audience. You know, it's the old thing where Cornette says, you know, work for your audience. And that audience wanted bing, 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 you know, boom, you know, let's get to it. And they were just, like, grabbing a hold, man. And they weren't feeling it. And that actually was a Doc and Gordy thing that I didn't like too much. Like, I thought Gordy sometimes reverted to grabbing a half crab and waiting a little too long. But, you know, whatever. I would rather, like, a shorter Gordy match, but obviously he knew what the fuck he was doing. So how dare I?
I will concede that point, that you know, maybe because they were just – it was a tag team tournament. And, you know, a lot of the teams, you know, with the exception of, like, Liger and Pillman – and then Hase and Hashimoto, you know, who are bringing their flavor to it. That the tag teams probably all kind of stuck to the same formula. They didn't really have any real deviation in tags. Like there wasn't like a tag that was a wild brawl over the arena. Another tag, you know, that was like a tornado match or something. You know, that they were all just kind
Dude,
of the same tag.
If I recall correctly, none of the tag matches even did too many tag moves, like tandem spots. Like there wasn't even much of that shit. It was like a bunch of individual shit and like tags involved. Like I don't know, I just didn't like it. Like now that
well,
you just said
although,
that, I wish Hashimoto and Hase would have wrestled Gordy and Williams. I never even thought of that at the time, but that would have been badass.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like I said, that's something that you know, I think you will agree though that that's something that could never happen again. You know that, you know,
no, tag team wrestling is the devil.
Yeah, when you know, sadly, there have been some awesome tag team matches this year, but you know,
oh,
I guess
yeah,
we're
but
just...
they're all in the indies and not in WWE.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's depressing, but you know, I mean, you know, it is what it is, and that, I guess for us, you know, that was kind of the last real major run, you know, for me that I remember Terry Gordy in, although he did have several other U.S. runs, and I guess we can talk about those briefly. Like, you know, he had a run in SMW. Have you seen any of the SMW Terry Gordy stuff?
You got to revert back, though. We skipped some very tangible things.
Talk to me,
Gordy
Rob.
Williams lost the belt. They lost the belts to Wyndham and Dustin, right? And that match people loved, the one from Center Stage. I don't like it as much as everybody else, but I will say that wasn't a really well put together tag team match. I remember everyone talking about that. And one of the very few times Wyndham and Gordy were in the ring together, so I might have to rewatch that one too. But that, I remember Phil Schneider, I think, really likes it. You know, at least one person I know that loves it. But that's a really good tag match.
Well, you know, you're right. And that was on the Saturday night show. And that was another 20-25 minute match that, you know, once again, though, it was this huge main event, this huge title change. And I'm not saying that you don't get good TV matches today, but it's just something that, you know, you don't see like you used to, you know, where this main event, this big, huge title change is built up and then actually happens and delivers. And it's on TV, and it was something special, you know. And I guess ever since they started doing marquee matches every week and having 3-minute, you know, main event matches, that, you know, it's just something that we lose out on today. That, you know, like,
and center stage is a better audience for that particular match. Like the Bash, they had so many of those flow matches, but like center stage, they had Wimpy's, and then they had that match. It was a better crowd, if I recall correctly, for those two teams. And something else I got to reference. I was in San Jose, California in 1992 when Vader won the belt. And I remember after Vader won the belt, Watts devoted two Saturday night, like WCW Saturday nights, to getting Vader over before Ron Simmons beat him. And they had every wrestler on the entire roster, from like Scotty the Body to fucking Brian Pillman to the Z-Man to like everybody talking about Van Vader. And I remember Terry Gordy wrestled Jim Garvin or something on one of the shows. And after the match, they were talking, and Gordy's like, "I'm going to get me the big Vader and beat his ass." And I was like, "Oh, my God." I'm like, "Holy shit." Like, Vader and Gordy. Ah! I was like, "That's insane. He'll be a double champion." I was like, "Oh, my God." You don't even know. Like, Vader Gordy to me was such a ridiculous match that it would have been, like, greatest match of all time status. And I was losing my shit in San Jose, and my aunt telling me to calm down. I'm like, "No, Terry Gordy's going to wrestle Vader." Like, I remember I had, like, a little, like, my little, like, I had a 2-year-old cousin, and I was teaching him. I'm like, "Man, Vader." I thought this little kid had to do the Vader thing. Like, my aunt's like, "Jesus Christ, what are you doing, my son?" But, like, I remember being so amped about Vader. I was so amped for Vader to be the champion, and I was so excited that, like, Gordy referenced him kicking Vader's ass. I'm like, "Fuck." And it never happened, unfortunately, but, like, it was one of those cool things. I remember, like, Kong the Barbarian kicked some guy's face off, and, like, they had Cactus come out and say that, like, he was going to get the Barbarian to beat Vader. Jake Roberts showed up, and Jake Roberts was like, "Vader, I was always told things that are always bad for me are the most fun." I mean, like, I'm like, "DDTU or something." I'm like, "Oh, my God, Jake Snake invaded." But, like, it never happened. Like, this is – Bill Watts is the fucking man. His political views aside, that guy fucking books and TV that I'm getting pumped about, like, fucking 20-some years later right now. But, like, it was really, really good. And I just remember that whole TV show. And then, like, Ron Simmons won the belt, and I was happy when that happened, too.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, it would have been cool if, you know, Vader would have kept it.
Okay, Rob. Well, I guess it's, you know, before we get into those other territories, why did Gordy leave the WCW this time? He just kind of disappeared mysteriously. Him, you know, never to be seen.
I never knew till recently because I got some older observers. I guess what happened was Gordy and Doc were scheduled to wrestle the Steiners. And I had always heard that Gordy didn't get the money he was owed. And Doc always said that he didn't get the money he was owed for that contract that they had. Doc stayed and didn't get the money he was owed because it was breached because Gordy left. And then later, I think either Doc or Hanson said it was because of drugs that Gordy left and went to Japan. So who knows? I don't know. I'm not going to say for sure, but that was the rumor. So, and that, you know, Gordy obviously played with being a hard partier, so that could have been the case, but, you know, he left, and it ended up being Steve Williams and Steve Austin against the Steiners at Halloween Havoc. I'm pretty sure that's the case. And it's funny because they're both named Steve Williams. I just thought of that too.
Yeah,
but Steve Williams squared against the Steiners. I got to probably check that match out. I'm sure it was good. But they had that match. And then Gordy was never to be seen in the WCW again. And I didn't really keep track. You know, when I was reading the magazines, I knew he was still in Japan. I knew what he was doing. The first time I got the Observer was a month. I got it in September 1993. And I believe Gordy's incident on the plane happened in late August 93 or maybe early September 93. Because I didn't understand the gravity of it. I just knew that Meltzer explained that Dr. Death was going to take Gordy's place. And Gordy was, you know, questionable. No one knew what the status was. And, like, as time went on, it was kind of kept hush. You never really knew. And then they said he was in a coma. He came out of the coma. And they were like, well, you know, he suffered some brain damage. And I never understood. I just figured, well, he'll be back next year. Because I wasn't a fucking doctor at the time. I don't understand this thing. So, like, I didn't know. And apparently he died twice before and came back. So I was always under the impression that, oh, well, you know, whatever, you know. He kicked it, you know, he's legally dead, and he kicked out. But I guess this time was the time. So then when he came back, he didn't have all his faculties like he used to. He had to relearn a lot of things he was originally a natural at. And I remember, I think Cornette was the first person to really book him on a national stage. And he wrestled, like, Balls Mahoney and Boo Bradley. And I don't think I've ever seen any of that stuff. So I really can't comment too much on it. I just remember some dickhead from the Torch making a prick out of Gordy and Cornette threatening to kick his ass. Like, aside from that, it's like all I remember.
Well, one of the projects I'm working on. Well, one of the projects I'm working on actually is an SMW retrospective. You know, it's just kind of a celebration of SMW and, you know, kind of take the best matches and the most memorable angles. I'm actually really looking forward to watching that Gordy stuff. Just kind of see, you know, where his state was at the time, because the next, you know, because I really haven't seen any of that SMW Gordy footage. I've seen a lot of SMW, but not Gordy. So I was kind of curious if you had. So when I started on the SMW project, I'll be really interested to see, you know, how he came across on TV, because the first time I remember seeing him after that was on ECW with the match with Raven. And I thought, wow, you know, and then he has this really good match with Raven. I think, wow, okay, Terry Gordy can still go, you know, this is a really fun match. But then you realize that, you know, it was just kind of a special deal and it was kind of a one-off and he wasn't ever going to be the same. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've never actually seen that match in full. I just know that it was a surprise. I remember him coming out to Freebird. I remember the whole crowd just slowly rising to their feet when Raven was sitting in the corner. And they're like, holy shit, it's Gordy.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that it was really fucking...
I'm sorry, Rob, to interrupt you. Let me rephrase that. Maybe the match as a whole wasn't that great, but I want to say the moment was a really great moment. And then
I heard
Raven
it was really great. Like, people put that shit over as, like, a ridiculous, like, a 4-star affair. Like, Gordy's back, even, I've heard. Just people saw that. So I've never seen it. I need to see it. Like, I've seen clips, and it looked like a badass match. But then, obviously, they brought him back again, and they had him and Brian Lee, I think. And then they had a match with him and Doc reuniting, and him and Doc against the Eliminators, which is really a match I was probably losing my mind over, even if I didn't know any better. And I remember that match. I remember Perry Saturn saying he hated the match. It was just awful. But I've never seen it. I just saw, like, a clip of it, and I know it ended with, like, Doc doing an Oklahoma Stampede through a table or something. And Gordy actually laid in the ring, prone on the mat, and Saturn climbed up to a makeshift scaffold, and he dropped an elbow off the scaffold all the way down to the mat on Gordy. So,
oh, shit.
That's nuts. Yeah. I remember Saturn talking about doing that, too. But, yeah, those matches probably weren't what everyone would have hoped. The Raven one was a nice thing, but then Gordy also was in IWA in 1995, the year prior, IWA Japan.
The King of the Death
and
Match.
He shoot-punched Cactus in the face. This is detailed in the book. And I thought he didn't do too bad there. You know, I don't know. Like, it's not nice to even compare, because obviously he had something happen in his life. I mean, you don't really want to judge, whatever.
But that's kind of the contrast, because going back and watching that King of the Death Match tournament, it was so sad watching Gordy, you know, he couldn't pick Cactus up, botched a few moves. He was kind of wandering around aimlessly, like he shouldn't have been there. You know, it just should have been somebody else. And, you know, that's kind of, and I only got to see that stuff on tape, like, years after, you know, probably after the Foley book was already released, you know. And just seeing it and then just reflecting on it, thinking, man, you know, that you know you can't tell him to hang it up because it's something he's been doing since he was, what, 13 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. If anybody could say that wrestling was their life, it's Terry Gordy, right, you know? And mm-hmm. and just to see him in that state, you know, in that match, in that Cactus match, was really depressing, really depressing. And then, you know, and
well,
then,
remember,
you know,
Oh, go ahead.
No. I'll wait.
Well, I remember, like, Cornette saying, like, that guy from the Torch was like, well, Smokey Mountain's foisting off this Terry Gordy as the old Terry Gordy. And Cornette's like, well, he fucking is, you know? He's the same guy. It's like, just because, you know, a baseball star can't hit fucking, you know, whatever the batting average. I'm not a baseball guy, but doesn't mean he can't pick a fucking bat up anymore. I mean, that is all he knew, and, you know, he came back, and they tried to make it work, and, you know, even though it didn't really work, he fucked, you know. It's still Terry Gordy. I remember he came back as the Executioner for an incredibly ill-fated run. I don't even remember much of that. All I know is he wrestled the Undertaker, which in 1991 and 92 is another one of my fucking jerk-off matches where I'm like, Terry Gordy would have wrestled fucking Mark Callis? Are you kidding me? That's right up there with the Vader match and the fucking Sting and Luger match. I mean, those are badass matches. I mean, it didn't happen, but, you know, it just sucks that by the time that happened, I mean, obviously it was a fucking mess. But, you know, whatever. But then, like, I guess he faded away, and we'll get the obituary. I mean, Meltzer wrote that fucking fantastic obituary. I mean, Meltzer's the fucking man. He always writes good obituaries. But that Gordy one really hit me, though, man. Like, he really had a knack for getting that story right. I mean, he had all that little finishing touches, like the news that he was actually at WWF, like, a couple days prior to his death because they were in, like, Alabama or something, or Tennessee. And he went, and everybody went and saw him in the dressing room and said they knew who he was. And afterwards, he told Michael Hayes, you know, I'll never go back to another show. And then, like, he passed away, and it's like, you know. But, like, it's nice that everyone got to pay their last respects to the fucking guy. Because he was the man, dude. Like, Gordy, I remember he did a shoot interview, and that was a real fucking mess. Because I remember, I won't watch it. But I remember on the end of one of my videos, they would put highlights of the new stuff that was out. And they had him, and it was just horrifying. Like, I don't know. It's just, I remember someone said, you want to watch it? I have it. And I was like, no, I don't want to see that.
Just cause I think I'm with you on that one.
He seemed like he was having a lot of trouble recollecting. And it's like talking to Schnooka now. It's like, all right. But... yeah, that was rough, but if anybody has that Gordy obit, check it out, man. Like, if it's on the Observer site, you know, subscribe, whatever, check that out. It's a really good Observer. It documents his whole career way better than we even could here. But, like, you know, it's really a good retrospective on his entire career, coming up from, like, age, like Will said, like 14 or 13, you know, getting into the wrestling, fighting Bobby Eaton in Alabama and stuff.
And I'm gonna have to look and see if that obituary is in a Meltzer's tribute books. Do you know if it's in one of the tribute books?
But I don't know. I think in some of those books he cuts them down a little bit. So I don't know if you could find it on the site, do that. But if you can't, go to the tribute books for sure. It's definitely in the tribute books. I do remember in there recently.
I think that's something that maybe we should ask Meltzer or something if those are edited from the newsletter versions.
Yeah, well, I think you have to, like, for some of them. But, like, if it's edited, it's very minorly edited. But I'm sure it's still worth it reading.
Just hearing you talk about it makes me want to go hunt it down and read it, you know. I think when we finish the show, I'm going to go dig up my copies of the tribute books and, you know, read this Terry Gordy thing. You kind of... in the last 2 days, you know, it would have been one show, but it's two, and hey, you know, no big deal, right? You know, we work out the kinks, we deal with the issues as they come up, but in the last couple of days, you've kind of really lit a fire under my ass to kind of rediscover my love of Terry Gordy, and we just talked about his death, we talked about his illness and whatnot, but I really don't want to talk about that. Rob, what is your favorite Terry Gordy angles? What are some of the angles that you remember clearly?
My favorite thing, and it's the first one I remember, is the Steiners were fighting Hayes and Garvin, and Terry Gordy was the third Freebird, and Rick Steiner was mentally disabled. So, like, Rick Steiner's talking to Jim Ross, and Terry Gordy's out, and he's like, yeah, those guys are like sissies. They're sissies. He's like, why do you hang out with those guys? And Terry's like, they're my brothers, Rick. You know, they're my brothers. And Rick Steiner's like, I don't understand that. They're like sissies and stuff, and they wear the shiny clothes. And he's like, I have a brother, but he's not like a sissy. He's like, Rick, you got a brother. They're my brothers. And like, Rick's like, oh, I don't know. And then they just goes on for like 5 more minutes. And then finally, Gordy just fucking drills him in the face. And, like, Jim Ross is like, he's like, Jim Ross says to Gordy, he's like, Terry, he's a little slow. I was like, this is awesome. And then Gordy just drills. And, like, it's one of those deals where the microphone is in, like, the microphone is in the way of the punch. So, like, when he drills Steiner in the face, it kind of, the acoustics of the microphone make it that much more devastating. Steiner goes down. And then, like, all the other Freebirds come out, the sissy Freebirds come out, and all three of them are laying the boots to fucking Rick. And Scott Steiner runs out, and Jim Ross has the immortal line of, here comes Scott Steiner with a 2x4! No, it's not a 2x4. It's like a fucking half-inch by, like, inch board. It's so fucking pussy to see now. But, like, he comes out with, like, a Hacksaw Jim Duggan 2x4 on an anorexic diet, and it's really funny. So that's my probably favorite Gordy angle, or at least the first one that came to my head, and I'm happy I brought up because I could do my Gordy impression. Right. But I like that one a lot. And obviously, Doc and Gordy and the Steiners, Clash 19, Bill Watts, let's hook them up, is like a fucking moment in time. Like, that's like the best shit ever right there. Like, you can't – I'm smiling ear to ear right now. Even that was so fucking good. So that,
man,
I say,
I'm smiling listening to you, man. I'm smiling listening to you. In fact, I gotta say, your Gordy impersonation is right up there with Dean Rasmussen's Dick Murdoch impersonation, man.
Yay!
So
I'm
gonna have to request that you do that impersonation every show we do from now on. I don't care if we're talking about a Japanese guy or somebody. I don't care. You're gonna say anything that they say, any promos or interviews that they say. You're gonna say it in a Terry Gordy voice.
Sounds good, man. What's your favorite Terry Gordy angle?
My favorite Terry Gordy angle has to go back to something that we talked about yesterday, and that's the pile driver angle. Like I said, that's one of the very first impressions I ever had as a kid watching wrestling. And so that, to me, that was huge to see, you know, one of my heroes, Ted DiBiase, because back then I think we had 12 channels total, like not 12 channels, you know, or what do they call it, and then cable. No, we had 12 channels total. And, one of them was the TBS, and watching that Georgia wrestling with the Freebirds taking Teddy Biasi, I just kind of burned this image in my mind of wrestling life. And then the other one that I really, really enjoyed was, and it's something that I didn't see when it happened, but I got to watch some clips of it that were uncovered recently, and it was the Freebirds hair cream angle in Mid-South. And when they blinded JYD, and I didn't really understand why it was such a big deal, because I saw actually when it happened, when they did the hair cream angle with Buddy Roberts and Iceman Parsons, but then to see it, and then just to read about it in the magazines, and then to actually see the footage, you know, I just thought, man, this is amazing. This is what wrestling's about, and really, you know, just kind of reinforces that, you know, when angles happen at that time, it's just something that I don't know if we can ever capture those type of moments. And I think I still watch wrestling today in the hopes that I might see one of those moments that was just burned in my mind as a young kid, child, or, you know, even a young adult.
Well, now one of those moments will happen once in a blue moon, and by the next week they'll fuck it up. So, like, in the old days, they had those moments, and then they actually, like, they had, the NXT thing was like, holy fuck, they're finally being halfway watchable. Something I could fucking actually get into is happening on my TV wrestling, and by the next week they fucked it up beyond all recognition. So, fuck them.
Another one was the Punk Straight Edge Society when he was playing the, you know, the punk rock Jesus, you know.
Like, you remember watching wrestling in the old days and not getting fucking annoyed? That was always fun. Like, now it's just like, why even? It's like when, like, my mom watched soap operas back in the day, and she'd tune in every fucking day to see what would happen next. And now she doesn't fucking give fuck one about them. And I can see why, you know. I mean, I still like WWE to a small degree, but I just don't fucking understand why people really like it. But whatever. To each their own.
Yeah,
are we going to discuss
exactly.
Gordy matches now? Because I got a fucking...
The Gordy matches. Let me not... I'm gonna tell you mine, and then I'm going to let you close the show with your favorite matches. The first match I want to mention is actually a pretty famous match. It was a Terry Gordy versus Killer Khan Texas Death Match. And it's the one where Terry Gordy shakes Kerry Von Erich's hand after the match. And for somebody growing up on Texas wrestling, you cannot imagine how huge of a moment that was. But, you know, never mind that the match itself was full of blood and anger and piss and vinegar, man. But then just to have him shake Kerry Von Erich's hand at the end just was just mind-blowing at the time. Holy shit, the brothers are reunited, you know, the Von Erich brothers and the Freebird brothers, you know, shaking hands, man, just unheard of. And, you know, and then they had like a Big Ten Man a year later or something, but whatever. And then another match, it's not a great match, but it's a match I watched recently, and it was a taped fist match with Black Bart. And really, I mean, if you want to see Terry Gordy and Black Bart punching each other in the face, that's the match.
Good match.
It's from UWF, I think, from Power Pro Wrestling. And I just, it's one of those Gordy matches that I'll just, you know, I'll put up there with any Gordy match. It didn't make the Mid-South set, but it's something that I definitely think people would have fun watching. What do you got?
Well, my Gordy is weird because, like, I'll literally go from every stage. I'll say the first Gordy match I really, really will say people should check out, Gordy Chris Adams from World Class. I think it happened like 83
awesome
or 84. German suplexes, Gordy bumping like a complete freak the whole match. Like, Chris Adams in his prime, like, babyface Chris Adams in his prime, I'll say. And, like, Gordy was awesome in that. Real sweet German suplex, probably one of the first ones I ever saw. After that, we'll say AWA, the Super Clash show at Comiskey Park, Hayes and Gordy with the fucking Rebel paint against the Roadies with their paint. Unbelievable. Maybe not a fucking, five-star match, but just a cool vibe. The Roadies and the Freebirds locking up in front of all those people. Next match, I'll go with and say Gordy and Gordy and probably Hacksaw Duggan. It's not a full match, but you could get highlights of it. When Gordy won the UWF belt in the first tournament for the belt, Duggan punching Gordy, Gordy taking good bumps, and then ultimately Duggan succumbing to the pile driver. Another one, 1987, this is when Gordy went to NWA after they merged. Gordy and Dr. Death, and probably the first match they ever had together against Dick Murdoch and Eddie Gilbert. It's a bunkhouse match, and I love bunkhouse matches. They come dressed as you are. It's
that was a really short
minute
match,
TV
too.
Match. It is, and like nowadays I can see people going, meh. Nah, this match, when I was a kid, I remember it to this day. It opened the show on Worldwide, about 5 or 6 minute matches, but you got Gordy and Dickie Murdoch exchanging punches in the face, and Eddie Gilbert doing his cartoon bump for the finish. Really good stuff. Love that match, too. Continuing here, after that, I'm going to go with Gordy and Hanson in 88 against Kawada and Tenryu. Everybody check that out. All Japan, 1988. Greatest match of all time. After that, I'm going to pick a Gordy Dog match. Gordy Doc against, I believe it was Misawa and Kawada sometime in 1991. I don't have the exact date, but it's a fucking killer match. Misawa and Kawada really matched up about as good as you can with Gordy and Doc. And then finally, Misawa and Gordy had a really, again, I am really sad I can't give you an exact date, but I have a match with Misawa and Gordy on one of Will's sets. But it's a really good match.
Didn't we put it on your Naylor comp, on one of your Naylor comps?
We probably did. So it's on there. It's really badass. It's Misawa swinging elbows at Gordy, Gordy flying all over the place. There's a sweet German suplex on it. So, yeah, check that one out, too. Terry Gordy, what a man. You love him. Bam, bam.
Absolutely.
My brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope you've enjoyed our retrospective, our fucking hour and a half or 2 hours of Gordy talk. So hopefully we'll pick a new wrestler next time and wax poetic on those, that dude, too.
Yeah, and if you see this posted on the boards, feel free to suggest wrestlers that we can talk about in the future. You know, Rob and I, we're huge wrestling fans, as y'all might know, and really like a lot of the old school. I know, we still enjoy a lot of the modern stuff, but I love talking about the old school wrestling and wrestlers from the past, and that's kind of what our show's about. And we'd be interested to hear what y'all have to say about wrestlers we talk about in the future. And we'll definitely still have guest hosts. I just want to reiterate that we still plan on having plenty of guests. We just, Rob and I were just talking about how we really wanted to discuss more, and booking guests isn't always easy because of schedules and things. So we just said, hell, we're going to talk about wrestlers because that's what we love. And Rob, anything else you want to say before you call it a day?
No, man, that's about it. Thanks for listening, everybody, and make sure if you click the first episode, hopefully you know there's a second one. We'll try to put the links together, and we'll be back probably talking about Stan Hansen or whoever else people want to hear talked about. Sit well.
Awesome. All right, buddy. We'll talk to y'all later, and have a great night. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines.
Ever dreamed of owning your own home? If you're a council or housing association tenant, the government's Right to Buy scheme could open the door for you. Because now you can get up to £77,900 off the price of your home. So why not find out if Right to Buy can open the door for you? Call an advisor on 0300 123 0913 or go online to righttobuy.gov.uk.